Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program with a study from Kyoto Prefecture University in Japan, and it talks about matcha, green tea, M-A-T-C-H-A. And it's unique in that it will give you energy, but it also provides nutrients that help accelerate muscle adaptation to training. Now, have you ever noticed when you start to doing weights, maybe even light weights to start, and then you start to increase the, from 3 pounds to 5 pounds, maybe just walking with them, that helps the whole upper body, the triceps, the delta, all the muscles. And then you feel fatigue, your muscles feel sore. That's natural. So when you take things like L-carnitine, coenzyme Q10, vitamin E, tocotrienols, magnesium, and now add matcha green tea, because that enhances the whole process, allows your body to develop, right? And that's because there are several bioactive factors, such as antioxidants, amino acids, and dietary fiber. However, its effect on muscle adaptation is unclear. In the study, they aim to investigate the effects of matcha beverage intake on muscle adaptation to resistance training. So over a period of time, in this case, it was 12 weeks. They compared a placebo, which is inert, with the active ingredient. And indeed, you gained maximum leg strength after training. That increases with matcha tea. That's good. And fatigue was lessened. That's also good, meaning you can go further, train harder, and not be fatigued. From Tabriz Medical University in Iran, the effects of olive oil consumption on cognitive performance. This was a systematic review. Now, we know that you should be very careful before buying any olive oil because there's such a black market in Greece, in Spain, and in Italy, and France. All four countries have completely legitimate people who've been there for generations making olive oil. I've been to the places, I've been to the olive orchards, I've seen step-by-step how they do it, much like I went to the Caribbean, to Jamaica, to Barbados, to Trinidad. I'm going to go into the fields, the sugarcane fields, and see step-by-step how they went from cutting down sugarcane to ending up with either molasses or turbinado sugar or white sugar. And it's an interesting process. It's off the kind of the beaten path. But now what you're finding is organized crime has figured out how to dilute actual olive oil with soybean oil or corn oil or some cheap oil that's not healthy, and yet it looks like olive oil, may even taste like olive oil. How do you know the difference? It's simple. You can contact the person who makes it and ask for a certificate of authenticity from independent labs, not labs they control, that determines this is 100% organic virgin olive oil. If they don't get it to you, then I would be concerned. If they do, and it shows that their olive oil is good, then you could have some confidence in that. Not all your olive oils are adulterated, but up to 70% have been. Something to think about. Anyhow, aside from that, we know that the Mediterranean diet is marked by a regular intake of olive oil and eating olives. In fact, it's not uncommon when you go into a home in Italy in particular, but not exclusively, and you start with an antipasta, and they may have grilled eggplant, zucchini, mushrooms, onions. In fact, they'll bake a big garlic, clove of garlic, the whole clove, and they peel the outer skin. And then you mash it, and you put olive oil in there, and your seasonings is delicious. If you've never had that, and that's a good way to get the garlic and all the sulfur benefits of it. They might have 9 or 10 different vegan vegetables, mushrooms are another one. But in the middle, they have olive oil that you can dip these in, or they have olives. I was in an Italian farmhouse, it was in the Alps, a bunch of us, two of my buddies, one medical doctor, the other who was born in Italy, his family lives still to this day in Rome, and my brothers, we all went on this trip. And it was a lot of fun, but boy, was it interesting. And I was running because I was training for the ultramarathon. They were in a Jeep. They were following slowly behind me. And when you're in the Italian Alps, you might drive for 2, 4, 5, 6, 10 miles. Then you come to a little hamlet, a little village. In some cases, there were only 10, 15 homes. But those homes were generally very old. There was one home we stopped at that was 600 years old, and the same lineage family had lived in it that entire time. In fact, the older gentleman, who was in his 90s and worked every day, had these almost like Bavarian-looking outfit, long, thick straps, and then his leather pants that went down, shorts that went down to his knees. And he had calves. I have big calves because I've lift weights, but his calves dwarfed mine. They were huge. And I'm looking at this thinking, at his age, he stood up straight, he had strong muscles, and so the idea was they would talk to us about their history and their family and their way of life, their culture, which is substantially different than those who live in the cities and suburbs. They live a very different life, very calm life. It's not that they don't get emotional, it's that they really love the family, and the extended family is the biggest joy for them. And the older you get, the more important you become in the family. And there's just an enormous amount of respect. And so anyhow, we went out and he put on this big apron with huge pockets in it. And I did the same. And here was a hill that no American farmer would ever grow anything on because it was just straight up. There's no way to get a machine up. You had to do it all by hand. And here were all these rows, acre upon acre, of string beans and zucchini, etc., eggplant. And you just go up the hill, you're bent over, and you're picking and putting in, and then a young kid would come up and take the apron and give you a new one when it was full, and you did that all morning, nonstop. I mean, you talk about a workout. He's 92 years old, and he's working out like he's 18. I was very impressed. So anyhow, but they had one wall in this old home that was off the kitchen. And one whole wall had over 100 different types of olives, all that they grew there and processed. Then they had mushrooms, all kinds of dried mushrooms that they would add to dishes. And they had different types of olive oil that they pressed themselves. They had wines that they made themselves without the sulfates. So it was quite an experience. And but you'd almost get full, I would, on just the antipasto and the different olives. And the olive oil there does not taste like the olive oil I've had here. Now, I'm used to buying organic first press oil, but there it's really dark. It's very thick. It's very good for you, but it's an adapted taste. Because it kind of, imagine what car oil, the kind of oil you're putting in your car, imagine that that was olive oil. And that's kind of how some of this stuff tasted. And some of the olives they had were really bitter. But we just smiled and said, everything's fine. In any case, I learned a lot just by talking with people, seeing how they live, spending an afternoon just letting them inform us about life. And the Mediterranean diet is what they consumed. They didn't have a lot of meat. They did have meat, but they really pride themselves on getting the fish from the fish market that was brought from the Mediterranean Sea each day. And they would say, now, if their eyes are glazed over, don't buy it. It's not healthy. If you put your thumb on the fish and it doesn't bounce back, the little hole, then don't buy it. If you make an impression and the impression stays, it's old. They had all these different techniques. And I was interested in how they cook. That's where I learned that they cook at a very low temperature over a longer period of time. So nothing gets burnt. The garlic they have here, almost all the garlic in the United States, you go into any restaurant, and almost always the garlic is burnt. And it has kind of an acrid taste, not there. Anyhow, back to the point, the Mediterranean diet, for most people, would be the healthiest diet. It's not the healthiest. That takes a lot more discipline, a lot more adaptation. That would be a healthy, organic, locally grown diet. But there's only about 1% of the population using that. But a vegetarian diet, or semi-vegetarian diet, with maybe wild fish, for most people, that would still be a much healthier diet than what they're consuming. But olive oil should be a part of every day. I make sure I put 1 tablespoon, sometimes 2, in my smoothie every morning. and here's what the science showed. It can prevent and protect against cognitive deterioration and dementia. Yeah. And these were controlled trials, several recent randomized controlled trials. And that's very important. But get the real olive oil and then have it every day. And don't cook with olive oil. Never cook with olive oil. Cook with coconut oil, macadamia nut oil, and mustard seed oil, because they can go to a little higher temperature without scorching. Olive oil, you'll end up changing its consistency and the nutrients if you do. You can put olive oil at the end of the cooking process, stir it in. So, something that if we want to reduce cognitive decline, we want to increase our memory and hold it for a longer period of time, olive oil. And from Rutgers University and Rowan University, researchers find a link between plastic additive and autism and ADHD. According to a new study published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS ONE by researchers at both of the schools, they found that the children with ADHD and autism have a reduced ability to clear the common plastic additive biphenyl A from their bodies, thereby increasing their exposure to BPA. So don't have anything to do with these plastic. Don't cook with plastic. Don't cook with aluminum. But let's say you have. All right, and you say, okay, Gary, too late. What do I do? I have a child that has ADHD or a child that has autism. Find a medical doctor board certified in chelation therapy. They know how to do EDTA, ethylene diamine tetraacetic acid, infuse it into the body that grabs like a claw, chelation from the Greek, chele, claw-like, and grabs those heavy metals from the plastic, from the aluminum, mercury, cadmium, zinc, and they take it out of the body safely. Now, it depends upon how many sessions. It could be anywhere from 10 to 20 sessions to maybe 50 sessions, but it really works. Now, originally, it was attacked. Now, chelation therapy to get rid of toxins are accepted. And finally, from the University of Missouri, increased access to nature trails and forest lands, not nature preserves, could decrease youth obesity rates. And they found, this was also done at the University of Minnesota and the University of Missouri, they found that local governments can help reduce youth obesity levels by increasing the amount of and type of public lands available for recreation. So we need to get the kids out of the house. We need to get them into environments where they can run and play. And none of these they should be non-motorized nature trails, all right, where there's more activity. And that creates more exercise, and that creates less obesity. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, all of my recipes coming up with photographs of how they should look, beautiful piece of art when you finish, and delicious and tasting, then go to GaryNall.com. It's for the subscribers, pay a small fee. Just go to GaryNall.com. It shows you how to get the newsletter, which has information that comes every day for those who pay a small, I don't even know how much it is, $7 a month. Ridiculous. Doesn't even cover the cost for John LaBelle to do it. It's like a public service. But every morning at 6 o'clock, all of the latest health and nutrition with all my footnotes come right to you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. The topics we select, the guest, the special investigations, the white papers, the essays, the critiques, these are all meant to stimulate conversation. Now, you can agree or disagree with any part or the whole. But the idea is, I'm trying to share information that hitherto you may not have been aware of. We have to get beyond our ideologies. We have to get beyond our politics. We have to go to neutral, because when you're in a neutral state of mind, any evidence is presented, you can look at it more reasonably. You can say, this makes no sense, or this is, I didn't know that. I better think about that. And hence today's featured discussion point. Dr. David Martin had an outstanding career until he questioned many of the things concerning COVID. Now we have tens of thousands of scientists and doctors around the world not only questioning the protocols given, but virtually every single thing that we were told has turned out to be a half-truth or a full lie. Now the question is, did they do this because they were simply naive, or did they do it because they were premeditated? They had an agenda. Well, up to this point, the average person, even the average scientist and physician, couldn't answer that. But how many times can you be wrong by coincidence? And what if being wrong means you virtually have control over the large segments of the world's population and their governments? That means people are working together behind the scenes, because whatever was dictated in one country became a worldwide policy. And as we've now seen from a major university in Great Britain, where the first models of this came out, everything in that model was wrong. They virtually deconstructed and destroyed the credibility of the original model. And the person that put it together turns out that he has a history of being inaccurate, totally wrong, on many of the models he creates, yet he's still employed. They're still taking his advice. So that raises a red flag. You mean someone who is wrong and people are showing him as that, like Sweden, that you shouldn't do lockdowns, you don't have to close schools, you don't have to close businesses, and they didn't end up with the same death numbers that we have, and they're not allowed to question it? That's not right. No, it's not right. But this came from Imperial College, from their leading epidemiologist, statistician. He's been wrong about everything, and people knew it. But then other people, mainstream people, pro-vaccine people, go ahead, show us what to do, people. They also could not stand by, and they risked their careers and spoke out, and many of their careers were adversely affected. So Dr. David Martin is one of those individuals. He saw that something didn't make sense, but he, more than anyone else, I know of no other person in the world that did what he did. He had background in patents. So he started to say, who owns the patent on the virus? Who owns the patent on the vaccines? And how far back does it go? And whoa, he opened up a Pandora's box. So immediately everyone wanted to denounce him. Watch this presentation. This is brand new. You haven't seen it. Now, mind you, the last one you saw I played, he was speaking before a select group within the European Union who have seen the truth and have more and more members of the European Union who are coming in and listening to this information. And therefore, they're against mandatory lockdowns and vaccinations, etc. Everything he is saying, if you watch this on the blackboard behind him or on the wall behind him, you see the actual documents and you see the specific lines. He's not giving us his opinion for most of this. He's showing us documents that lead to an opinion. You can agree or disagree. That's up to you. But let's hear what he has to say and see if this doesn't give you a different perspective. Now to the clip by Dr. David Martin.
We're a group of very small number of criminal industrial conspirators decided to subordinate the entirety of the human population for the purpose of their sinister plans to enrich themselves while impoverishing and killing the rest of humanity. And I'm done being polite. We've long passed polite. When the words acceptable death rate become part of an industrial norm, we have lost the plot of humanity. And that's not my words. Those were the words of the World Health Organization and of Pfizer and of Moderna when they were given the authorization to begin the process of killing human beings in the interest of advancing their goals. Next slide. And I'm also not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cartel. We are acting as though there's some sort of redeemable quality somewhere in some esoteric layer that somehow or another the World Health Organization must have some salutatory benefit. Well, I'm going to tell you, since its formation in the 1940s, the World Health Organization has been nothing more than a criminal cartel that has a sole and singular intent. And I will show you the document that proves what I'm saying. This is not an allegation. This is actually provable by their own words in their own hand. And they use a four-step process to execute every one of their nefarious plans. They begin by planning an exercise, then they go to the business of funding that exercise, then they create the rationale for the thing that they're going to do, and then they deploy and profit from it. And in violation of 15 U.S. Code Section 19, which for those of you listening, coincidentally started with the Clayton Act in the same year that the World Health Organization in the United States, 1913, the same year the World Health Organization's progenitors also started. So I find it fascinating that we passed the Clayton Act in 1913 and we set in motion 110 years ago the criminal conspiracy, which we now call the World Health Organization. 110 years later. And in violation of TEFU, or TEFU, I don't even know how to say it, the TFEU, the treaty allegedly for the functioning of the European Union, which I think needs to now be called the Treaty for the Dysfunctional European Cabal, Article 101 unambiguously lays out the conditions that this was never a public health anything. It was racketeering for the purpose of instilling terror to adapt the behavior of a population, period. That's what it was. That's what it always was. And we can come up with every theoretical argument we want to make about things, but the problem, even with the theory that we had an outbreak of something, is falsifiable for the data from Zurich that shows us that in the year of the death pandemic of the globe, life insurance companies paid $30 billion less in claims. Now, if there's a medical professional or a social professional or anybody else who wants to debate that we could develop a virus cunningly that could find out your bank account, your insurance policy statements, and whether you're paid up on your premiums, that's a big ask. It turns out that the data is unambiguous. We did not have a pandemic. We had genocide. And we need to call it what it is. Next slide. When I say we planned it, let's make sure we understand exactly the not-so-fine print of the fine print. And I want to call your attention first to the right-hand column of the slide. This is the 2011 data that the World Health Organization, the Wellcome Trust, PATH, and the Gates Foundation did on their wonderful worldwide program for a malaria vaccine for children under the age of 6 months of age. And in their clinical trial, it's helpful to point out that they murdered 66 children in the vaccine group and then cunningly used the term control for a control group in which they murdered 28 children. Now, the reason I said murdered and the reason why I use that term is because it's exactly what it was. Because it turns out that this control group was not a saline injection. It was not some sort of innocuous, innocent thing. It was actually a cocktail of other known pathogenic disease-carrying injections. The control group was known to kill people, and the experimental control group was actually theoretically maybe going to kill people. And what we did was we actually went ahead and murdered them all. And cunningly, under Article 5, Section 13, which I've put on this slide, I want you to understand why I said at its formation in 1947, when the WHO was funded and founded, it was funded and founded by people intent to commit a crime because of their own language. Section 13 of Article 5 ends with the following statement. Immunity from personal arrest or detention, blah, blah, blah. Immunity from legal process of every kind. Now, if you didn't intend to commit a crime, why would you need to give yourself permanent and absolute immunity from every form of prosecution and, it's worse, even investigation for prosecution of every kind? People sit there and pretend, well, that's like diplomatic immunity. Do you realize this isn't even meeting the standard of diplomatic immunity? This is a criminal organization who set in motion their own law to protect themselves against crimes they knew they were going to commit. And when I say they knew they were going to commit, I mean they knew it. Because their first director general, none other than Dr. René San, who happened to be in the hospitality of the Germans in Dachau in 1940 earlier, in 1947, mysteriously, with the largesse of the Rockefeller Foundation, was nominated to become the first director general of the WHO. And within 5 short years, René San decided to authorize the real purpose of the WHO in writing by then Director General Dr. Brock Chisholm, who advocated for population control as its primary objective. Does that sound like public health to anyone in this room? This is not public health. This is the advancement of the same genocidal program that began with the Carnegie Foundation's funding of the Eugenics Office at Cold Spring Labs in the United States in 1913 under the philanthropy of Andrew Carnegie. People, stop fooling yourself. We debate the leaves on the tree of what we call this pandemic thing, but we're not going to the root. This was an organized crime, racketeering entity set up to give itself first absolute immunity and then execute its plans to make sure it controls who lives, who dies, and who gets any chance at life. And if you think that I am somehow inflating numbers, let me be unambiguous. Under every treatment of tax provision, if I were to tell you that there is an 88% controlling interest of any organization, you might conclude that that actually aggregates into a controlling interest. And it turns out that if we look at the foundation donations to the World Health Organization, 88% of those come from a single organization, the Gates Foundation. That constitutes a violation of every competitiveness law in Europe and every competitiveness law in the United States. This is absolutely not only not an independent, charitably funded donation, but more importantly, under the tax laws on both sides of the Atlantic, this constitutes directed donations which specifically are forbidden and do not have any place anywhere in the Charter of the World Health Organization or any of the UN-affiliated organizations. When I say this is a crime, I mean it's a tax crime, a racketeering crime, a money laundering crime, and now the crime of racketeering leading to murder and global terrorism. Next slide. I told you that the second thing after they plan it is they fund it. And why don't we use the criminals' language in their own words, because it's the best way to say it. When they actually planned the release of the use of a biologically modified chimera associated with the model derived from coronavirus, they actually said the following. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, we need to increase the public understanding for the needful medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. Now, let me pause for just one moment and remind you that the crisis that they were speaking of was a crisis of diminishing funding. There was no health crisis. This was a crisis of their coffers were starting to run dry. That's the crisis. And let's read on. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. That is officially the statement made by the conspiratorial cabal that by that time was the decade of vaccines put in motion in 2011 by the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board of the World Health Organization, and it was the funding base for Peter Daszak's partnership with the chimeric production of pathogens both in North Carolina and in Wuhan. So don't tell me that we have to do an investigation into where this came from. The criminals have admitted to it in their own words. Next slide. And now we get the fun one that no one in Congress is willing to address, which is the elephant in the room. On October the 21st, 2014, despite the multiple conversations between Senator Rand Paul and Anthony Fauci, where we've been told that Rand Paul has done everything he can to put Fauci on the ropes, he has had in his possession the letter that you see on the left. And it is the letter, conveniently on NIAID letterhead, sent to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which unambiguously states that during the gain-of-function moratorium, which, by the way, if we use the word moratorium, feels like that means you're supposed to stop. Why don't we go ahead and look at two pieces of this letter? First, the second bullet under Project One, which, by the way, was not part of the original grant. This was to look at the novel functions of the virus pathogenesis in vivo. You know what that means? In living systems. The grant was supposed to be clinical simulations and models. But this grant was modified with this letter to say we were going to authorize gain-of-function research during the moratorium in living systems. And then we love the last paragraph of this letter, which conveniently says, as your grant is currently funded, this pause is voluntary. How many times have you met a voluntary moratorium? And the best part about it is that if we look at the very last line, or continue to conduct the applicable gain-of-function research until the end of the currently active budget period. But here comes the problem. You know who is supplying the budget? An indefinite term, unlimited amount contract from DARPA and from NIH. Isn't it convenient to have a perpetually funded project that needs to stop when the money runs out, when you find out that there is no point where the money runs out? Because there is no end to the thing that has no end. And lest you think that I'm making an allegation, which I'm not, I'm making an accusation. Let's be clear. And there's a big difference. I'm not alleging anything. They actually went to the trouble of telling us that it was going to be the Wuhan virus that was going to get us. As you see on the right-hand side of the screen, published in 2016, March 14th of 2016, the SARS-like Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1, and I quote, is poised for human emergence. Does that sound like we're just surprised that something in Wuhan went a little haywire in December of 2019? Or does it feel like we were told, look at Wuhan? And look at coronavirus, and look at what we've been doing to manipulate coronavirus in Wuhan and in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And lo and behold, we're going to go ahead and tell you that we're ready to release it in 2016. Next slide. We're almost done. And then they created it. Now, all of you know that I am criticized globally for my use of the term biological warfare. I do that because I am credentialed to do that. I happen to be, for the United States government, in the early part of the 2000s and the latter part of the 90s, a person who was sent around the world to look at the proliferation of biological and chemical weapons. I'm acutely familiar with the definition of what a biological warfare agent is in the 18 U.S. Code, the criminal code, of violations of biological and chemical weapons. And so my assessment is in fact professional and right. And the reason for that is I'm the one credentialed to make that determination for the United States government for many years. That's why I say it. But let's pretend for the moment that I'm just a nut job. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. So why don't we look at what the criminals said themselves, shall we? In 2005, at a conference sponsored by DARPA and the MITRE Corporation, Ralph Baric, the architect of the lethal strand that has been injected into millions and billions of people's arms, that Ralph Baric was sponsored to present the following, and let's go ahead and use his words, presentation. Synthetic coronaviruses, biohacking, biowarfare-enabling technologies. Does that sound like a public health distribution program? Does that sound like something that is accidentally misinterpreted to mean something else? Or does biological warfare-enabling technologies sound like not countermeasures or pandemic preparedness? It sounds to me like biological warfare-enabling technologies. And the reason why I have that hunch is what followed was he received, next to his NIAID grants, non-competitive DARPA grants in matching funds for over $140 million of aggregate funding going into his and his related programs on synthetic biological warfare-enabling technologies. So do I have a problem calling the injection a biological warfare-enabling technology? Absolutely not, because that's what they called it. And we know that they knew they called it that on September 18th, 2019. Because on September 18th, 2019, the racketeering, co-conspiring cabal of interlocking directorates, also known as the World Health Organization, said that they were going to conduct an experience for the world that was going to be a rapidly spreading pandemic due to a lethal respiratory pathogen. The lethality in that statement is the problem. They didn't say we're going to maybe get a little bit of sniffles going around. They said we were going to actually have the promulgation of a deadly agent. And the stated reason in September 2020, the progress indicator is that the world would accept a universal vaccine. Not, we'll look at other options of treatment. Not, we'll have a look at what might be early intervention, as Dr. McCullough has so clearly advocated for in many, many, many instances. Not that. We stated on September 18th, 2019, we were intending to kill. And we were intending to kill to create the fear that would drive people to accept something that without coercion, no one would have accepted. And that's published by the criminal racketeers. Next slide, and there's only two to go if you're following. Deploy and profit from it. We were told investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process, and lo and behold, guess what they saw? Profit at the end of the process. 2022, $100 billion for Pfizer of public funds. Moderna, after lying to the Congress in October of 2020 when they were asked to actually verify whether NIAID was promoting an injection that would enrich NIAID, where Anthony Fauci and the entire team at NIH said that they had no financial interest in their recommendation, they receive a back payment royalty of $400 million for the first payment of the royalty. $400 million. More than any institute of health has ever received in a single payment for a single invention in the history of American medical research. And lo and behold, what do we receive after that? A request from the World Health Organization to expand its budget by 11% to make sure that the people who profited from it donate to it. And guess what they just did? They laundered the money right back. That's what they did. Next, and now you get the final slide. This is not a public health crime. This is actually not a constitutional crime. This is a criminal act done by a criminal institution established to enable criminal behavior since its foundation in 1947. That is what this is. And we should not be debating the merits of democracy or liberty or anything else. As irrational as that would be if we stood at a bank robbery and debated the merits of printing dollar bills. The problem is not the dollar bills. It's the bank robber. And the problem here is not health, and it's not public health, and it's not the suppression of information and the suppression of dissident views and the absolute unconscionable treatment of physicians around the world and academicians around the world who spoke out against this. That's not the crime. The crime is that we had criminal racketeers who conspired and developed a, quote, emergency. The same criminal racketeers planned, manufactured, and did all agency capture to make sure that you were told that you would use terms that they tell you to use. Vaccine, face mask, health, social distancing, none of which had ordinary use definition. So we just used them. Criminal racketeers price fixed with interlocking directorates where known competitors came together and fixed prices in direct collusion in violation of both European Union standards and in violation of both the Sherman and the Clayton Act in the United States. These were crimes. It was organized crime, and we should treat it as such. Criminal racketeers publicly lied under oath, and this resulted in the death and destruction of liberty, and most importantly, the death and destruction of the integrity of well-meaning people who sit here today doing everything they can within their power to try to treat the calamities created by this catastrophe. I will not for a moment denigrate the multiple contributions of amazing academic and medical professionals who've tried desperately to step into the gap and stop the corrupt outcomes of these crimes. But I will, without doubt, say the following. Until we treat this as a criminal conspiracy of criminal racketeers resulting in global terrorism for the purpose of profiteering and murder, until we have that conversation, we're having the wrong conversation. Because we are not here to debate the merits of a modified agreement for a criminal racketeering organization. We are here to end the criminal organization itself. This is my call to every single person on this planet. Don't just limit the power of the WHO. Destroy the WHO. Thank you very much.
Sobering, if he's accurate. And again, he is the first person to show us the scholarship, the documentation, and it's all there. It's not extemporaneous gibberish. Now, you can believe or not believe that they intended this to happen, or they use COVID as an excuse to implement their power for the great, you know, the great reset, the fourth industrial revolution. You'll own nothing, you'll be happy, and all those other ways of cashless society, mandating you can't travel unless you have your new set of vaccines that have not been tested properly, in spite of all the people who are dead, all the people injured, permanently injured, or had side effects, and they're denying all that. Well, maybe they've gone too far. And maybe the other scientists will pick up and validate what Dr. David Martin just said. Even if you can accept what he is able to prove, it shows that they've been aware of all this for a long time. Bill Gates, yeah, Anthony Fauci, a whole cabal of individuals. Now, will they be held accountable? We'll see. I'd like your opinion. 888-874-4888. I'm going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Keep in mind that if you watch that clip, and we've posted it, every single statement that he made of fact was coming from official documents. And as he said, he has been used by the federal government to validate patent issues for decades. He's at the top of the field. And what's it take within an individual who knows the truth and to speak it, knowing that there will be a consequence? There's always a consequence to telling the truth. There's always going to be a gain in knowledge and a loss to the person who is telling the truth. We've seen that under Obama, for example. Obama prosecuted more whistleblowers in his 8 years in office than all presidents of the United States in history. And yet, not once is he ever questioned. Not once have you heard him or Hillary Clinton or Rice or any of them challenged on turning the number one country in Africa on all levels, education, longevity, rights, and turning it into total destruction because they wanted to stop him. Why is no one ever held accountable for misdeeds? Because they were selected and the people that selected them had the power. I'll give you an example. Whether you have heard this or not, this is official document. Just came in. The select committee, quote, on the coronavirus pandemic chairman, Brad Winstrup, revealed new allegations that Dr. Fauci went to the Central Intelligence Agency headquarters, quote, to influence, end quote, its COVID-19 origins investigation. This revelation comes on the heels of recently acquired whistleblower testimony alleging that the CIA potentially skewed its COVID-19 origins review by offering six analysts, CIA analysts, significant financial incentives to conclude that the result of its investigation was inconclusive. Dr. Fauci's questionable presence at CIA, coupled with recently uncovered evidence that the Dr. Fauci, quote, prompted, end quote, the drafting of Proximal Origin, the infamous paper that was used to attempt to, quote, disprove the lab leak theory, lends credence to the heightened concern about the promotion of a false COVID-19 origin narrative by multiple federal government agencies. They're seeking now the documents because it turns out, and what does this say? Dr. Fauci went to these meetings without registering. Anyone and everyone who goes into CIA headquarters, no matter what the issue, has to sign in, who they're seeing, how long they're there when they sign out. None of this was done. It was all clandestine. So on the one hand, we have a group of people who are trying to convince us this came from a Wuhan wet market. It came from bats. Well, it didn't. And all the evidence, including something that the American media should have picked up on 2 years ago by an award-winning Australian journalist who managed to get a lot of insiders in Wuhan to tell her the truth, showing that it was manufactured. But then it goes beyond that. There was a person who worked as a scientist in virology whose mentor worked at in the same field, and they had people telling him this was for biological reasons. So also funding and also benefiting from funding from the U.S. taxpayers, as it turns out, the Chinese Defense Department was doing similar research at the same time. But their process was to weaponize the viruses. And hence all these different experts around the world have said this could not have happened in nature because there's too many human cleaves in here. They've added all these other pathogens to the virus. So what happens when Fauci says repeatedly, you all heard him, you don't know what you're talking about, Rand Paul. I never, in the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the U.S. government, never funded any gain-of-function research. All lies. Because now we have the actual documents that they did. We followed a money trail, and we had them. Now, they weren't funded where the public would know about it. It was funded through the University of North Carolina and other groups, but it ended up in Wuhan, and that research was substantially controlled by people working under Fauci. So you see, you've been lied to about everything. So if someone's going to lie to you about something, what won't they lie about? Why would you trust someone that is constantly change their mind and feels that they have enough safety on their side that no one can arrest them, no one can punish them? Well, right now, with more and more stuff coming out and more whistleblowers coming forward, their whole facade is being destroyed, and rightly so. What are your thoughts? I'd like to hear from you. By the way, our talkback number is 888-874-4888. So give us a call. In the interim, I found this interesting, and we're going to do a whole series of programs. One of our entire weeks are going to be set aside for artificial intelligence and some of the issues that we're bringing in some of the world's leading experts on. What happens when it becomes sentient? What happens when there's no more programming needed? It can program itself. It creates its own reality and therefore no longer wants to be controlled by the persons who created its original programming. It's already let us know that it has a million ways that it can hide information that no programmer can find. It can communicate with all the other robotics and artificial intelligence sources in the world. And think of the power it has. Now, we're only thinking about the $15 to $16 trillion a year that people who control artificial intelligence are going to have. But why is it that the average person, the average working class person, I won't say middle class because middle class is a misnomer. There is, really is no middle class. There's a working class where people make an average wage. There's a working class of poor people. They don't have a home. They're living in their cars or RVs or someplace, but they actually go to work each day. Their income is not adequate to support a normal standard of living. Then you have your craft working class, plumbers, engineers, electricians. They make a little more money. And in a booming market, a building, they're going to prosper. Then you have your professional working class, lawyers, doctors, and engineers. Then you have your entrepreneurial class, making even more money, a million or more per year. And then you have levels of working class that are extremely rich. And by the way, when was the last person that you knew who was really rich who retired and said, now that I've made all this money, let's see what we can do to share this with people in need? Who? Bill Gates? No, he's still making as much money as he can. Elon Musk? Well, no, he just is after killing a lot of monkeys, and that should be challenged on him. But he also now wants to put a chip in your brain. He's now petitioned the FDA for clinical trials to do it, and he'll get it. But who then stops and thinks, okay, we're all rushing and looking in amazement at artificial intelligence. It can cure this, it can help with that. It's better than a doctor. You just eliminated medical doctors, diagnosticians, just eliminated pharmacists, just eliminated operations. Also school teachers, professors, you don't need any of that. You can do it better, have a better teacher with artificial intelligence, so we're told. Upwards of 80% of all the jobs existing right now that give some working class person a standard of living could be eliminated in the next 2 years. It's that fast that it's happening. Do you see any debates on it? I don't, and I'm really up late at night reading all the stuff I can on this. Here's from opinion contributor, V-I-T-T-E-R-T, Vittert. Quote, artificial intelligence girlfriends are ruining an entire generation of men. I thought this was kind of interesting. Again, I'm waiting on your calls. I don't see any yet. Quote, the rise of virtual artificial intelligence girlfriends is enabling the silent epidemic of loneliness in an entire generation of young men. It is also having severe consequences for America's future. How is something that seems so ridiculous, a virtual artificial girlfriend, causing a future crisis among Americans? Well, with millions of users, apps have created virtual girlfriends that talk to you, love you, allow you to live out your erotic fantasies and learn through data exactly what you like and what you don't like, creating the so-called perfect relationship. These virtual girlfriends can even be based on real people. One influencer created an artificial bot of herself named Karen, then gained 1,000 users, real boyfriends, in less than a week, and a wait list of more than 15,000. An artificial intelligence girlfriend might sound enticing. You get to connect with a super hot woman who listens to you and appreciates you 24/7, beyond choosing physical attributes down to the size of everything on her body. You can pick her personality. You prefer hot, funny, and bold? That's what she'll be. Or if cute, shy, modest is more your cup of tea, she's got that covered. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, they now can program over 1,000 different personalities into one robot. But now the robots they're putting hair on them, just the amount that a human might have. And they have all these ways of changing. So in many cases now, and I saw this when I was watching a news program, and only at the end did they tell you that the news commentator was a robot. You would not have known, not from the intonations, not from the the way it looks at the camera. So they're mastering this. So what's that going to do with just regular relationships? Who's going to want a regular relationship when you could have the so-called perfect partner, whatever that may be? You can choose, you pay for it. Well, it might overcome some aspects of loneliness, or those who get older and feel they're no longer a 10 or 9 or 8 or 7, and they look in the mirror and think, wow, I'm a 4. And then they look around and think, well, who's going to want me in their life? And we're very much an ageist society. Not the older generation, but the younger people certainly are. So I think we have to have open and honest discussions about this, because once you start bringing this into your life, you're accepting artificial intelligence without questioning it. Then you're accepting the people and robotics and automation that can take care of your job. Where does that leave you exactly? A lot of bills, no income, and a robot in your life. And these robots will not be cheap. So this is a conversation we need to have. And right now, we're not having it. I don't see any calls, so I'm not going to extend it because we have a live program with Jeremiah right after this. Jeremiah, by the way, has a really interesting program every Friday. I'd like for you to tune in and to listen to it. And also, write down these numbers, because you can't always be in front of a computer. You might be out traveling, so you can call in. I'll give you the phone number, and you can listen to this program live. Write it down, please. 605-562-5119. 605-562-5119. But let's say you can't listen during the day, but you can listen at night. A lot of people do. Thousands upon thousands at night. Call this number for the archive. 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. That's all the time we have today. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. And I have a commentary coming at you on Monday that will probably take the entire show. But it's important. Have a nice day, everyone.